someone who I know is the parents, and I appreciate the opportunity, Pat, for this material. I've presented this material in several meetings. These folks, I have several that came with me tonight. I think there are nine beside me that came. They've heard it before. But Pat heard this over at Jackson Drive, at least on the internet, and asked me to present it. So it's dealing with worldliness, and I don't spend much time on this principle, but worldliness has always been a problem. That's all I wanted to establish right at this juncture, in the Old Testament and in the New Testament times, and it is today a problem. There will always be a problem with worldliness. Our focus tonight is going to be on sexually attractive dress. I want you to think about that expression. I have carefully worded the title of our study because I think it reflects the problem that needs to be addressed that Pat just mentioned a moment ago. And the reason for that is because the concept or the words immodest or modesty or immodesty may send different signals to different people. And what I mean by that one whose dress is sexually attractive, whether they know it or not, may think that she is not immodest. For example, let me give an extreme. Someone who's not a Christian, who goes to the beach in her bikini, probably thinks she's not immodest. She thinks she's doing nothing wrong. And so, to talk about immodesty, I'm not opposed to using that terminology, but I'm using that less in my teaching and focusing on sexually attractive dress. And I think you'll see why as we go further. Let's talk about the fact that it's possible to dress in a way so as to be sexually attractive. You're probably familiar with this passage in Proverbs 10, where there was a woman who met him with the attire of a harlot. This was a prostitute, a harlot. And she's wearing the attire of a harlot. The Living Bible Paraphrase says she dressed seductively. That's sexually attractive dress. Being sexually attractive or attracted is not wrong. When I say it's not wrong, that's because Proverbs 5, we're going to take some passages we're going to spend some time with. I'm just hitting these and moving. But in Proverbs 5, it talks about a man, rather than going after a harlot, should rejoice in the wife of his youth. I'm going to be blunt in our study tonight, but I'm going to try to be tactful as well. That's talking about the sexual intimate relationship. He's to be sexually attracted to her. Nothing wrong with that. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 9 says, it is better to marry than to burn, and some translations say burn with desire. That's talking about being sexually attractive and sexually attracted. In fact, God made us that way, to be sexually attracted to one another. God made us that way. This is an important point. Being sexually attractive or sexually attracted to anyone other than your marriage partner is wrong. And that's the premise which we're going to be functioning on tonight. Being sexually attractive or attractive to anyone other than our mate is wrong. Here's what I want to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to give this study a fair hearing. Approach it with an open mind. I'm convinced studies like this do more good than we credit them. I have people all the time tell me, your material on modesty just doesn't do any good. My wife has a tendency to say that nobody's listening to you. And she's probably right. But at the same time, I'm convinced it does more good than we give it credit. But that, if we didn't do lessons like this, and there wasn't people like Pat who says, I want these folks to hear this, and there wasn't elders who were saying, preach on that, it would be worse than we have now. If we didn't preach on it, didn't teach on it, it'd be worse. It is worse in a lot of churches where they're not teaching on it. Pat mentioned a moment ago, he's seeing a lot of places where he goes, so am I. But it would be worse if we weren't teaching on it. We're doing some good by what we're doing. Not everybody present here tonight is going to accept what I say 100%. That's just not going to happen. I know that. Not everybody who accepts it 100% are going to conform to the principles. When I preach on this at home, and I do about every year, preach something similar to this, there will be people who come out and say, amen, you hit the nail on the head, and then they'll turn around and dress in a way that shows that they didn't get the principle. Because here's what I'm asking you to do tonight. Give this a fair and an honest hearing. I'm going to speak plainly, and I'm going to speak bluntly. You're going to hear some things tonight you'll say, I've heard that before, and I know that. And you're probably going to hear some things that you're going to say, nobody ever explained that to me. I've never heard that before. I don't mean a new Bible principle, but how a Bible principle applies. And you may say, nobody ever explained that to me. And you'll see what I'm talking about as we go forward. Let's admit this in our study, that a great portion of today's clothing is sexually attractive. Would you agree with that? Well, let's look at some samples. For example, low-cut tops, short shorts, tight jeans, form-fitting, short skirts, dresses with splits in them, wording across the rear of pants that draw attention to that section of the body. All of that is designed to draw attention to the female body. That's where I want to focus, but that also applies to the male body as well. But all of those are designed to draw attention to the female body. Let me give you some evidence of that. Every preacher has this quote in their library or in their material. It's an excellent quote. Mary Quant, long before y'all were born, designed the miniskirt, and she said, mini clothes, that's M-I-N-I clothes, brief clothes, are symbolic of those women who want to seduce a man. And when she was asked, where's all this? She said in one word, sex. What we're talking about is clothing is sexually attractive today. Much of it is. Notice this quote came from 1956. That was before I was born. And I'm probably the oldest one in here. That's a long time ago. That's interesting that this was a long time ago and not in 2012. Life magazine reported that short shorts were favored to Bermuda shorts because Bermuda shorts emphasized the least attractive part of the legs, the knee and the calf. What's that saying? That's saying other shorts emphasize the thigh, which is sexually attractive. We're just admitting that great portion of the clothes are sexually attractive. Now, our culture thinks that's good. Isaiah 5 and verse 20. Someone tell me what that says. Isaiah 5 and verse 20, in light of this principle. You can summarize it or just tell me what that verse is. Isaiah 5 and verse 20.
Woe to them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter.
All right. Somebody else will be looking up Philippians 3:19. We'll come to that in a minute. Calling good evil and evil good. In other words, there are people who dress in some of the clothes like we have mentioned up here. Some girl comes out and she has on short shorts, and somebody will say to her, you look great. She has on a tight form-fitting outfit. That's your dress. That is you. You look like $1 million in that dress. That is what you need to wear. They're calling evil good. What about Philippians 3:19? What does it say?
Who's God is that? Who's God is the belly of his glory is their shame, who minds earthly things.
Here, their glory is their shame. They're glorying in that which they ought to be ashamed of. Something that ought to embarrass them. My point is, culture thinks this sexually attractive dress is good. We are quite naive if we think our culture does not rub off on us. If you think you can live in a world where they're calling good evil and evil good and they glory in things that ought to be shameful and that doesn't affect us, you've got your head buried in the sand. Our culture does affect us. It affects me and my thinking. And I have to guard against it. Now, let's talk about some principles that should govern our dress. And let's go to Genesis chapter 3. I want to talk about divinely made clothing. I'm under the impression, and you tell me not if you agree, I'm under the impression that anything made by God is better than anything made by man. Would you agree? Now, the first clothing was actually made by
man.
But the first clothing that was appropriate was made by God. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 3, I want you to back up to chapter 2, when God made man and woman. I want you to notice in Genesis 2 and in verse 25, they were both naked. If you're so disposed to underline and mark things in your Bible, you might underline that word naked. And if you write out in the margin of your Bible like I do, you might write the word nude, because that's how God created them. Now, naked is a Bible term. We need to talk about that. We're going to use Bible terms. And we're going to do so in a tactful way. They were naked. So when God created them, they were naked and they were nude. Let's go to chapter 3, verse 7. After they ate of the fruit, both the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew they were, here's our word, naked. What are you going to write out to the side if you write?
Nude.
They're still nude. So, what did they do? Verse 7. Made themselves coverings or an apron. But now let's drop down to verse 10. They still were
naked.
Might write out to the side, relatively naked. Did they have some clothes on?
Yes.
All right, let's talk about how much they have on. The apron here that they made for themselves was a girdle-like or loin type of garment. Many say that it was much like what would be covered by jogging, a pair of short jogging shorts. William Gesenius, H.C. Leupold, Colin Daitlich are just a sampling of the authorities who say that's what the word that's translated apron means. It's a loin type cloth. In other words, it covered the midsection of the body, much as we have illustrated here. Are they naked? Not nude, but they're still naked. They haven't covered their bodies as they should. Here's how I know that. Let's go to verse 21. God came along, and what'd he do? Made them
tunics.
Notice verse 21. Also for Adam and his wife. What does that tell you? Something very practical about modest clothing.
Applied to both.
It applies to the man as well as the woman. God didn't just put clothes on the woman and said the man can do what he wants to. He put clothes on the man and the woman, and he made them tunics of skin that covered from the shoulder to the knee. You say, how do you know? Well, that's what a tunic is. This is the ISBE. What does ISBE stand for? Anybody know? You might have a Bible program where you see the ISBE on that program.
International Standard Bible
Encyclopedia. Exactly. It says that corresponds most nearly to our long shirt, reaching below the knee, and in cases it was designed for dress occasion, almost to the ground. In other words, it was a garment that went from the shoulder to the knee, by the very nature of the word. Cassinius, Harris, and Brown, Driver, and Briggs say that it was generally with sleeves coming down to the knees, rarely to the ankles. It always went to the knee. Fred Wright, in Manners and Customs of Bible Land, said essentially the same thing. That inappropriately is translated coat. It was a shirt that was worn next to the skin. It was made of leather, hair-like, wool, linen, in modern times usually of cotton. The simplest form was without sleeves and reached to the knees, or sometimes to the ankle. The well-to-do wore it with sleeves and extending to the ankle. Women as well as men will wear it, though the style may have differed. His point is, just like all the other authorities said, the word means that it went from the shoulder to the knees. Now here's what I've learned from Genesis 3. They were nude. They tried to clothe themselves. That didn't go too well. God thought they needed to do more, and the first clothing that God put on them covered their nakedness. Their nakedness was not covered until they covered from their shoulder to the knee, until God put a tunic on them. Now, put that principle in the back of your mind, because that's going to agree with other Bible principles we're going to notice. That ought to help me when I begin to wonder, where do I draw the line? Divinely made clothing is a pretty good standard to look at. Wouldn't you agree? That anything made by God ought to be a pretty good standard to follow. Man's standard didn't work too well. Here's a second principle that ought to govern our dress. Nakedness is not to be seen except by our mates, after they are our mates, not when they're going to be our mates. Get that principle. Nakedness ought not to be seen. Let's start at Leviticus 18, verses 6 and 7. Someone read that for me. I want you to see that uncovering the nakedness of anyone other than one's mate was prohibited.
None of you shall approach anyone who is near of kin to him to uncover his nakedness. I am the Lord. The nakedness of your father or the nakedness of your mother you shall not uncover. She is your mother, you shall not uncover her nakedness.
All right. This Old Testament principle was, and you say, we're not under the Old Testament. I understand that. We're establishing the principle that nakedness is not to be seen. That's all we're trying to establish. That uncovering the nakedness of anyone other than your mate was prohibited. That implies that the normal state of things is for nakedness to be covered. That's the way it ought to be. That harmonized what I saw in Genesis 3 when God covered their nakedness, didn't he? Showing one's nakedness is always equated with shame. Here's some passages like Genesis chapter 3. We were naked and we're ashamed. Remember that? Revelation 16, 5. Chapter 3 and chapter 17 say essentially the same thing. But look at Revelation 16 and verse 15. Someone read that for us. I want you to see that shame and nakedness are equated. Showing my nakedness is shameful. That's a part of shame. Revelation 16, 15. Who has that? I don't know your name, so you just pick. Start reading.
Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame.
Walk naked and see his shame. When nakedness is shown, that's shameful. We're trying to establish nakedness is not to be seen. Let's talk about that word naked. It is a Bible term. The word naked can mean complete nudity. Fair says that's what it means, but it also, we're going to look at Thayer in a moment, can mean partial nudity. Who is Thayer? Somebody asks you, well, who in the world is that? You probably don't read much from Thayer. Pat and Brent over here do, but most of us don't. You ever hear a preacher quote from Thayer? Thayer is to the Greek language what Webster and so forth would be to our English language. Would that be correct? It's an authority that defines original words. He says that the word nakedness can mean unclad or without clothing. Same authority says it can mean ill-clad or clad in undergarment only. By the way, the undergarment of New Testament times covered more than our undergarments. But they were said to be naked. So naked can mean either one. It doesn't mean complete nudity all the time. Kettle says badly clad, not fully clothed. Lavelle and Scott says it means lightly clad. The point is, a person can have some clothing on and still said to be naked. So let's just suppose a young lady comes through the door and she has on something that's exposing her thighs and maybe her back and her shoulders. And if someone met her at the door and says, you need to go put some clothes on, you are naked. How would she react?
I'm not naked.
Probably be offended. Because I am not nude. I have got clothes on. But is that a biblical term? Is that properly used?
Yes,
that's exactly how it's used. Here's a very important point. If you don't get any other point, you get this one, your time's well spent here tonight, and it'll be worth my trip here if you get this point. Exposing the thigh is exposing one's nakedness. I don't think people get that point, so I want three other people besides the one that came with me to read that and tell it, and not tell us what it means, just read that. I want to make sure we get that. Somebody else read that. Tell me.
Mm-hmm. Exposing the thigh equals exposing the thigh.
Okay, somebody else. Anybody?
I'll read. Exposing the thigh equals exposing one's nakedness. I think you're going to say this, Donnie, that you've exposed the thigh. Even if you're not exposing it when standing up, when you sit down, it can be exposed.
Absolutely.
You were going to say that sometime.
Yes, I'm coming to that. Good point. One more person. I want to make sure we get this. Maybe I don't read it good. So somebody else read it.
Exposing the thigh.
opposing one.
All right. Here's the evidence thereof. Exposing the thigh is equal to the nakedness. That is called nakedness in the Bible. Let's go back to Genesis 3. Remember when they covered their midsection of the body, verse 7? Remember that? They still said in verse 10 and 11, I was naked. They were still naked. Even though they had basically what would cover be covered by jogging shorts. They were still naked. Well, that's not the strongest proof. Here, I want us to turn to the book of Exodus 28. And again, we're looking at an Old Testament passage. But it's defining a term for us. This is talking about the garment of the priest. And I want you to notice that they were to make garments of linen. I'm looking at verse 42. You should make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness. There's our term. They shall reach from the waist to the thighs. From the waist to the thighs. That's a Hebrew idiom that it refers to all that is encompassed by those two terms. I won't take the time to develop that. We can look at parallel accounts of where that kind of construction is used. But it encompasses both the waist and all of the thighs. But covering from the waist to the thigh, that's this section right here, was called covering his, what's our word? Nakedness. So if I'm showing that section of the body, in any part of it, I'm showing part of my nakedness. Let's look at another passage. Isaiah 47. This was not talking about a literal person, but it was talking about Babylon and personifies the nation of Babylon as if Babylon was a woman. And in Isaiah 47, God said his point is, I'm going to embarrass Babylon. I'm going to humiliate Babylon. I'm going to make her embarrassed. But notice his wording in Isaiah 47 in verse 2. He said, take the millstone and grind the mill, remove the veil, take off the skirt, uncover the what? The thigh, your nakedness shall be uncovered. When the skirt is raised and the thigh is exposed, her nakedness is seen. Now, all of those agree. Remember, they covered from the shoulder to the knee. They covered the thigh. So covering the thigh was covering their nakedness. Exposing the thigh was exposing the nakedness. God said, I'm going to expose Babylon. I'm going to show her thigh off. I'm going to show her nakedness. That's part of your nakedness. You say, how do you know? God told us so in these passages. That's how I know. Now, let's make application of that. And this is the very thing Pat was mentioning a moment ago. When one sees your thigh, he is seeing your nakedness. Think about that. When one sees your thigh, they're seeing your nakedness. That might be when you wear a bathing suit. And you say, I wouldn't do that. Well, there are people who do. There are Christians who do. They wear bathing suits. And when they're wearing bathing suits, they're exposing their thigh. When they wear shorts that expose the thigh. Not all shorts expose the thigh. Some come down below the knee. If it's a short dress that exposes the thigh. Here's some things that may not be intentional. Maybe it's a dress or some shorts that ride up above the knee. Is that still showing the nakedness? I didn't intend for that to be shown, but here is a woman that is her dress is just right at the line and it rides up when she sits down. Or maybe it's those shorts that ride up when she sits down, or he sits down for that matter. And the thigh is seen. What is being seen? The nakedness. It may be splits that give a peek. It may be a dress that goes all the way to the ground, but a split comes up and gives a peek of the thigh. You're getting a peek of one's nakedness. It may be holes in the jeans. Jeans that drag the ground and you're walking on the cuff. Well, but the holes at the thigh are letting people see your nakedness. Exposing the thigh, exposing one's nakedness. If you understand that principle, that's going to go a long way in making application. Listen to me carefully. You may not realize what other people see, but quite often in a setting like this, most of you have pants on. Maybe all of you do. But in settings like this, if this were a church service where you were wearing a dress, it is not uncommon to sit in a class like this or a service and you just glance across the aisle, or you passing the Lord's Supper, and you look and someone's dress has rode far above the knee and you are seeing their nakedness. If it's in a class setting where you're in a circle and you're looking straight across to somebody, you're seeing more than just a glimpse. You're seeing way on up the thigh. I'm trying to be blunt, but at the same time be tactful. Be careful when you're exposing your thigh, you're exposing your nakedness. Here's another principle. Men are more visually stimulated than women. Compared to women, men are more aroused by visual stimuli. That's a given. Evidence of that, that's why porn is more tempting for men. Do women ever have problems with pornography? Sure. More and more cases, even among brethren, I've heard where women got caught up in pornography and she was the one that was viewing pornography online. That's happening. But far more men have done that than women. The reason? Because men are more aroused by visual stimuli. It's easy to look in lust. What did Jesus say? You ought to know this principle by heart. You may not quote it exactly. What did Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount? A man that
looks at woman in lust.
Yeah. Could a woman look at lust? Sure. But why did he mention the men? Because men are more easily aroused by visual stimuli. Proverbs 6:25 says, "Do not lust after her beauty in your heart." Could a woman look at a man and lust because he's good looking? Sure. But it's more common for a man to look upon a woman and be stimulated to lust. All right, with that principle in mind, it happens even far more quickly for men. One brother compared women to crockpots, and if that be the case, men are more like a microwave. They're more easily aroused and more quickly aroused. Listen to this carefully. Ladies, girls, it doesn't take much visually to arouse a man's sexual interest in you. It doesn't take much. Just a hint, or a glimpse, or a peek is all it takes. That's all it takes. Now, you may be sitting here thinking, there are men who have dirty minds. Well, there are men who have dirty minds. 2 Peter 2:14 talks about men who have eyes full of adultery. What would that mean? Eyes full of adultery.
That's all they can think about?
That's all they can think about. It doesn't matter how she's dressed. He looks at her and she's an object of his sexual attention. She may be fully dressed in coverall, and he still thinks about that. There are men with dirty minds, but that's not the man I'm concerned about tonight. And that's not the kind of men who are sitting here tonight. Not all men have dirty minds, and yet they are tempted. There are good, godly men who try their best to be pure, who when they see a sexually attractive dress, I mean a woman dressed sexually attractive, they have to fight sexual thoughts. They're not men with dirty minds. They have to fight that. There are good, godly men who have to do that. And I'm not going to go around the room and ask, but if I ask every male in here who is a good, godly person, do you ever see people that you have to fight those thoughts? Everyone, if they're honest, will say, yeah, we have to do that. That's just being honest. That doesn't mean to have dirty minds. It just means you have to fight that. You think about this for a moment. For a woman to dress in a way that she's sexually attractive and then put all the blame on the man for his thoughts is a lot like leaving bare wires exposed and blaming the child for getting shot. Should the child have been playing with the wires? Well, no. But am I not at fault for leaving those bare wires exposed? And a woman, should the man be looking at, in this case, he's turned and he's really giving her the look, and you know what he's thinking. But does she have anything to do with that? She certainly does. I had to crop the picture because of her immodesty that I didn't want to expose. That is, she's to blame for him looking. Now, does he have a dirty mind? He certainly does. Let's talk about the word modest. Where would I find the word modest with reference to dress in the New Testament? 1 Timothy 2:9-10. Like manner, women adorn themselves in, here's our word, modest apparel. We'll read the rest of that a little bit later. Let's define modest. How would you define modest? Come on, define modest for me. You're teaching your friend who's never read that passage, and they say, I want to dress modest. What does that mean? What's this word mean?
Appropriate.
Appropriate? What else?
Reserved.
I'm sorry?
Reserved.
Reserved?
Not drawing attention.
Not drawing attention to yourself? It has the concept, this is from the dictionary, American Heritage Dictionary. The English word modest just simply means having a moderate estimation of one's own time, your talents, abilities, value. Having a shy, retiring nature, reserve, that's an important word. Quiet, humble in appearance, unpretentious. See what the original word meant. Vine says it means orderly or well arranged. The well ordered not only of dress and demeanor only, but of inner life, uttering indeed or expressing itself in outward conversation. Modesty doesn't have to do just with dress, it has to do with your whole atmosphere and manner of being. That there's a sense of reservation about you. We're going to make application of that in a moment. Here's some authorities that define the word. It comes from the same word from which we get the word world, cosmos. Orderly, well arranged. Respectable, honorable. Respectable again. Let's summarize what we just saw. If this woman is modest, we're saying she's reserved. She is humble, she's respectable, she's decent, she's orderly. Suppose a woman is out with her bikini on, out in public where everybody can see her. That's kind of an extreme case. Would you say she's a reserved person? No. Would you say, well, I think she's trying to be respectable? Not at all. Well, what if someone is revealing their nakedness to others, like exposing the thigh? Would you say, oh, she is so decent and respectable and reserved? Would you say that? No. Let's look at another word. The word for shame, same passage. They're to dress in modest apparel with shamefacedness. What does that word mean? Shamefacedness.
Not shame to be naked.
Yeah, exactly. The King James uses the word shamefacedness. American Standard shamefastness. New King James uses the word propriety. I like shamefastness. All those are good translations. It means a sense of shame that it's a sense of shame that is fast rooted in your character. What does that mean? Fast rooted.
Conscience, a guilty conscience to kick in?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Rooted deeply?
Yeah, rooted deeply. It's not on the surface. She doesn't just pretend to, oh, I'm embarrassed that you saw me this way, when really she's not all that embarrassed. She didn't care that you... But it's a shame that's rooted in your character. It's part of you. And that's how we ought to be in our dress. It comes from a compound word which literally means downcast eyes. What would that mean? How would that apply to our dress? Downcast eyes. Bashfulness.
It goes back to what you were saying about how a young lady might try to catch the look of a young man, or a man, period. Whereas if you keep your eyes in the right place, you're not trying to, draw that attention.
Okay. That's true. This is kind of an extreme case, but what if someone walked in on you as you were coming out of the shower? Would you boldly look them straight in the eye and say, well, hey, how are you doing? Or what would be your immediate reaction? You'd be embarrassed, and you're not going to look them straight in the eye. You're going to grab something and put around you, and your eyes go down, right? It's that downcast eyes where you're not bold in what you're doing, but you are embarrassed that someone saw you. And we ought to be embarrassed at some of what we're seeing even in the worship assembly. We ought to have downcast eyes. We ought to be embarrassed. Let's talk about good judgment. Same passage, 1 Timothy 2, says there is to be sobriety. Let's look at some other translations of that. Some other translations use the word sobriety or moderation. New King James uses the word sobriety, moderation in the New King James. It means soundness of mind. I won't read all the definition. Good judgment or sound judgment. It's the idea of sanity or self-control. In other words, good judgment says, don't show what he shouldn't see. If he doesn't need to be looking at your naked back, then don't show him your naked back. If he doesn't need to see your thighs, don't show him your thighs. If he doesn't need to see cleavage, don't show him cleavage. Does that make sense? That's good judgment. That's just using good judgment. He shouldn't see it, so I'm not going to show it to him. All right, those are the principles that govern our dress. I want us to talk for a little bit here about it's possible that your clothing could be sexually attractive. I don't mean the clothing you have on tonight, but I just mean the clothing that we sometimes wear. Is that possible? Yeah. Well, let's establish this. Let's clarify what sexually attractive is. Let's define the word attract. It comes from a Latin word which means in the direction of, compound word, ad meaning in direction of, and trahere meaning to pull. It means to attract or to pull in the direction toward. We use words that are very related to that. For example, tractor. You may have on your, if you live on a farm, I saw a couple of tractors out here. What does a tractor do? It pulls in the direction toward. It pulls the implements toward itself. Or traction. As you're getting traction, it's pulling in the direction toward. Well, the word attractive means providing pleasure, arousing interest, having the ability to pull or draw toward. So, sexually attractive clothing is the kind of clothing that draws or pulls attention towards one's body. Would you agree with that definition? Because that's what the word attract or attractive means. To draw or pull attention toward. In other words, the attention that's being drawn is sexual attention. It draws attention to sections of the body that are sexually arousing. I'm trying to be as blunt as I know to be without being out of line. My point is, when some of the clothing we mentioned a little bit earlier, here's clothing that's got some message written right across the rear of the jeans or the pants. What does that do to the person walking behind them? Draws their attention toward that section of the body. When there's a low-cut blouse or dress that shows cleavage, what does that do? Draws attention toward that. And on we go. When the midriff is showing, riding above the jeans, that draws attention toward that sexually attractive dress. When the thigh is being exposed, whether it's by accident or on purpose, that draws attention toward that sexually attractive dress. By very definition. Our clothing sends a signal. Would you agree with that? If a woman walked through the door here and she had on the outfit a habit that the nuns wear, what would your impression be? She must be Catholic. If a guy walked in and had a policeman uniform, you would think he's probably a policeman. Clothing sends a signal. Even good clothing sends a signal, doesn't it? Proper clothing sends a signal. Sometimes our clothing sends a sexual signal. And that's true whether we realize it or not. That's true whether we intend it or not. Would you agree with that? What if a woman said, that's not my intent. I wasn't trying to be sexually attractive. It still are. As far as men are concerned, sexually attractive clothing has the same effect whether or not that is your intent. Let me illustrate that. Suppose you go out your back door and you have a neighbor on the right and a neighbor on the left. And on Saturday morning you go out and the neighbor on the one side is wearing a bikini because she wants to attract your attention. and she's out washing her car, and she's doing everything she can to draw attention to herself. The lady on the other side doesn't want any attention, but she's out there merely getting some sun in a bathing suit. When the man walks out the door and he looks at either one of them, which one of them may be a temptation or sexually attractive? Both of them are, whether that was their intent or not. But we need to keep that in mind as we dress. That's not my intent. I'm just trying to be stylish. Sexually attractive clothing has the same effect whether it's your intent or not. We may be sending signals that we're not aware of. I won't bore you with a lot of quotations. This is a woman that Shante Feldham, who wrote this book called The Male Factor. She's not a Christian. To my knowledge, if she is, I don't know anything about that. She's in the secular world. She wrote a book about women's behavior in the career force or in the workforce. And she did her research. I haven't read the entire book. I've read excerpts from the book. But I saw several interviews that were written, not an oral interview, though she was interviewed by NBC, I think, when this book came out. But I read several reviews where she had been interviewed. And her studies revealed that she was shocked at how women did not have a clue about how men perceived them. Let me restate that. She was shocked that most women in the workforce who dress in a seductive manner or sexually attractive dress did not have a clue that that's how men were viewing them. And so listen to some of the quotations. She said, among the thousands of men and women I've interviewed and surveyed over the years, I found no subject more universally misunderstood than what a man thinks when he sees a woman overtly showing a good figure. So we are frequently told men are visual, but I realize that many women did not know what that actually means. According to brain scientists and researchers such as Michael Guron, some percent of women, perhaps as high as 25%, are visual in a similar way to men. If you're in that category, you're more likely to instinctively understand a man's reactions. But the other 75% of the women who aren't visual have very little concept, literally, of how men see them. That's important. That's the thing I think we've missed in our teaching on modesty. We've missed that point. That's not saying women are dumb. That's just saying that, and I'll give you a quotation from somebody who really knows how to be sexually attractive, who says that women need to be taught about how men are visual, that need to be taught so by men. I'll give you evidence of that in just a minute. Let's look at a little more what she said. In most instances, the women had no idea that they were what was really going on inside of men around them. She says the visual wiring that men have presents similar temptations that men often say they wish they could turn off, especially in business setting. Their visual nature is highly attuned to and predisposed to take in appealing images, including the images of appealing women. And if that woman is dressing in a way that emphasizes her assets, the fact is not only noticed, but often begins a train of thoughts that men wish that they would rather not have. Well, I won't read the rest of the quotation, but she goes on to say that in talking to men, they are puzzled as why the women didn't want to avoid the situation. In other words, they go into a professional setting and women are dressing in a very seductive manner, and he is distracted by what she's saying. She's supposed to be giving a presentation, and he's distracted because she is in a tight dress and a short dress and revealing at the top and at the bottom, and he can't understand why she not dressed in a way that is not a distraction. And this lady's research simply shows that the women were clueless. One more quotation. So to test the difference in men and women's perception in this area, I asked men what they think if they saw a woman dressed in a way that emphasized or showing off her figure in some way, like a low-cut top or tight skirt. So I also asked white-collared women why they sometimes dressed that way and what was going through their minds. And she said there was a big difference in the results. 76% of the men felt that the women wanted the men to look at their body, and only 23% of the women actually felt that way. In other words, 3 out of 4 women said that's not what they were thinking at all. You see the point? That the majority of the women said, we've dressed this way, but we never thought about this being sexually attractive. We never thought about that. Like 75% of the women are saying, we didn't think men were looking at us thinking these things. Nobody told us. And this was written by a woman. That's interesting. Let me give you a testimony from a prostitute. This is one of the most interesting stories I've ever heard about modesty. The Bible talks about the attire of a harlot. That says a lot, doesn't it? The dress that a harlot wears. Well, a harlot knows how to be sexually attractive. If she doesn't, she's not going to be in business very long. When you think of the attire of a harlot, don't think of a trashy, painted-up gal who walks the streets that's sometimes pictured in the movies. That she is this trashy-looking girl that you'd think, if I was even interested in having a relationship, it wouldn't be with that trashy-looking thing. That's not the attire of a harlot. That's not what this passage is about. It's talking about clothing that draws or pulls sexual attention. Any of you know Gary Henry, preaches in Nashville, Broadmoor? Known Gary for 35 years or better. Gary used to live in Las Vegas and did secular work there. And he had a chance to interview a prostitute. She rode on the bus beside him. As he was going on a business trip, this woman walked in. He didn't know who she was. She sat down and began to exchange pleasantries. Gary is quick to advise that she was off duty while I was talking to her. But he didn't know she was a harlot. He just asked, she asked, what are you doing? He said, he was in the book business at the time. And he asked, well, what do you do? She said, I work up at, and gave the name of a brothel where she worked. Well, Gary knew enough about the area. By the way, prostitution is legal in some of the counties in Nevada. So it wasn't anything she had to be ashamed of. She just said, I work at this brothel. I mean, she didn't mention a brothel, but the name of the place. And he said, isn't that a brothel? Isn't that the place for prostitutes? She said, yes. Unashamed. And so he asked her a question. And that is, she'd been working there for weekends, and he asked her, could you explain to me what the attire of a harlot is? Are you familiar with that passage in the Bible? And she said, yes, I'm familiar with that. And can you explain what that means then? Because he said, I know a lot of women that, I'm a preacher, and said that a lot of women don't understand that, and could you explain that to me? She said, yes. She said, that's how you draw attention to certain parts of your body. That's what the attire of a harlot is. This was her testimony. She's a harlot. She's a prostitute. She said, there are five ways you do that. Number one way you do that is you reveal it. She said, that's the least effective. You just show your body off. The second way, you conceal it and reveal everything else. Like the bikini. And she said, that's not really the most effective either. The third way you do it, you reveal just a little bit of it. She says it's very effective to show a hint, a preview, or a glimpse. Now, that's not your old fogey grandmother. This doesn't know what the fashion is today, saying that. That's a prostitute who says it works. Show them a glimpse, a hint, or a peek. A third way, you cover it tightly. You show your form. You may cover all your body, but you cover it so tightly, they see the form of your body. She said that works too. And the most effective and the most provocative was to cover the body thinly. And by the way, the passages in 1 Peter and 1 Timothy that talk about the expensive attire was the thin clothing. Do your homework on that. You'll find that was the thin of the attire that marked out the shape and the form of the body. But she said that's how it's done. Well, this is interesting. Gary carried on the conversation. He said, you seem to know a good bit about men. Her answer, it's my business to know. That's how she makes her money. Gary said, well, why do religious women often not know as much about men as you seem to know? Now listen to this carefully. This is where we're missing it on our teaching on modesty. It's because, she said, they have never been taught about men by anyone other than their mothers, who often know very little themselves. Women who know how a man thinks are those who have been taught so by a man. She said, that's where I learned it. I know how men think. And I know what they think, and I know what they're looking for, and I know how to show them what they're looking for. Now, that's not your old fogey grandmother, and that's not some out-of-date preacher. That's a woman who makes her money showing her body. Now, let's go back over what she just said. She said, you reveal it. Well, you might do that by showing more skin. The more you show, the more attractive you become. You might give them a look at your thighs. You know, not the whole thigh, but just part of the thigh. Maybe all you need to show. You're revealing your body. That's how a harlot says, you dress like a harlot. You may give them a look at your breast. Not about the whole, but the part of that. Give them some cleavage. You might let them see your midriff. Give them a peek at that. You might show them your back and all of your shoulders, and so you're not covering from the shoulder to the knee. That's one way that you could dress like a harlot and become sexually attractive. That's not the only way. Here's another way. You can see it and reveal everything else. The swimsuit, especially the bikini, does that. It draws attention to what remains covered. It's not what's uncovered that becomes so attractive as it's what's still covered. That's not the most effective way. Third way, she said, was reveal it, just a little hint or a bit of it. Give them a glimpse of the thigh. Or maybe dress or a skirt that's not real short, but just gives a hint. Not a mini skirt. You'd be embarrassed at that, but it gives a hint. That's revealing a little bit of it. She says that's effective. Maybe it's jeans that play peekaboo with the low back. Well, it doesn't show all the time when you're standing in front of the mirror, but as you walk, it's bouncing up and down and giving people a peek. It's effective. Give a preview. Fourth way, she said, cover it tightly. One-piece bathing suit does that. Tight jeans. You may have jeans that go all the way to the floor and you're walking on them. But if they're tight, form-fitting, it covers it tightly. Or tops that show the shape of the breast. Or maybe a snug dress or a skirt that fits over the backside. And guys are looking. Maybe it marks out the lines of the undergarment. I'm trying to be as tactful as I know how to be. But a lot of women don't realize that you can, just as she walks by, you get a glimpse of the lines of her undergarments because her dress or her pants are so tight. The fifth way, she said, cover it thinly. Some of the white, thin tops reveal undergarments. You can see right through it. Thin pants that mark out the underwear. Material so thin it clings to the body. Well, let's add another principle about. We're still developing this thought. It's possible your clothes can be sexually attractive. Revealing clothing can be more sexually attractive than complete nudity. Would you agree with that? Anybody disagree with that? Well, let's see. This was a book that came out many, many, many years ago called Of Love and Lust, Theodore Russ. Many preachers have quoted from this through the years. It has to do with the psychoanalysis of the romantic and sexual emotions. And he said, an astonishing great number of men are of the opinion that women are more attractive, there's our concept, partly dressed than nude. They prefer to see women partially disrobed to the side of complete nakedness. In many cases, the development of sexual excitement is retarded or weakened by the nude body, while the sight of partly unclothed female body affects them as exciting. In other words, you wouldn't think of going out in public completely nude. That would just, to even think of that is offensive to you, and hopefully it is. You wouldn't think of that. But this quotation, and I think most men would agree, that's true. Ask around and say, is that a true statement? And men will tell you, that's true. Theodore Wright was absolutely true. That's why so many preachers have quoted it time and again. They know it's true. But if you go out where you're just showing them the glimpse of the hint, that's far more sexually attractive than if you were completely nude. Now let's close with some objections here, and then I'll be through. This material always faces some objections. People may not word it to me, but some of these are objections that I've heard. One objection someone says is, if somebody thinks something about it, that's their problem. How would you respond to that?
That's true if we done all that we can do. We've done all that we can do to be modest. And someone still has thoughts, then yes, at that point.
Yeah. All right. If we've done all that we could do, that's a valid point.
Now he reminds me in Matthew 5:32 about putting away your wife, not for fornication, you cause them to commit adultery. Well, the woman who commits adultery is her fault, but you also cause it, so both parties are at fault.
Absolutely. Their problem, that is someone else looking and lusting, is secondary. The main problem is parts of your body, including your thigh, your forearm, your cleavage, should not be shown to any man. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
That's the main problem. The very point that Pat just quoted from Matthew 5 can be established from a couple of other passages. When one causes another to stumble or initiates the process, they bear guilt. Remember Jezebel? Ahab sinned, but Jezebel stirred him up. She stirred him up. She was partly responsible for that. Luke 17 makes a similar point to what Pat just did about causing another one to offend, causing a one to stumble. So I learned from those passages that I bear some guilt too. That is, if I cause someone else to lust, and I contributed to that, they may be doing wrong, but I contributed to that and I bear the guilt in that as well. Here's another objection. We can't really know where to draw the line. You know, all that stuff about modesty, that may be good, but how can you know where to draw the line? Nobody really knows. How would you check? How would you answer that?
Why get close? Why get close?
All right, that's good. Why get close?
In the divinely made clothing example is, like you're saying, the perfect example that we have.
All right, that's good. What else?
It'd be like saying it's impossible to obey God because he told us how to dress, but we can't obey him because he didn't give us the exact line of the centimeter. But we can't obey him, just forget about it.
Just forget it, just let it all go. And that's really the point of it, I think, is that, that since we don't know where to draw the line, then I can draw it wherever I want to. Well, I have to admit, and you will too, that there's certain areas of judgment that have to be drawn. I understand that. But if we say we can't draw the line, that puts us in a real strange position. How so? Well, let's just say, okay, we can't draw the line. That's the conclusion I've come to. Then we let the length of the dress get shorter, then shorter, then shorter. Right? So if it can't be drawn at the knee, then would 3 inches above the knee be okay? Well, we can't know where to draw the line, so that's got to be okay. What about 6 inches above the knee? Is that okay? Well, we can't draw the line. That's got to be okay. What about 12 inches above the knee? And why don't we just keep going until the skirt's gone? Because nobody knows where to draw the line, so we take the skirt off. Well, let's do the same thing with the top. We don't know where to draw the line. Let's let the top get lower and lower and lower. Is it all right to show a little bit of the breast? Well, we don't know where to draw the line, so I guess so. Why not then 75%, and then why not the whole thing? And it's finally get lower and lower until the top's gone. And so we're back to complete nudity again, being justified because we don't know where to draw the line. That's absurd. When somebody makes that point, you remember this, when somebody tells you we don't know where to draw the line, that if they draw any line, it's going to be all arbitrary. I'm not drawing an arbitrary line. I draw the line where God did, from the shoulder to the knee. And that's where we have to draw the line. I draw the line that when parts of the thigh are exposed, the nakedness is being exposed. Someone said, you don't know how to draw the line, so how can you say this is immodest? Because I'm seeing your thigh and I'm seeing your nakedness. That's where I draw the line, where God did. And the line has to be drawn if it's sexually attractive. If it's sexually attractive. Here's one more objection. This is one I hear probably more than the other two. I have people who hear me preach on this and they come out. I tell you what, I really appreciate that. You really nailed it. That was good study. I really appreciate you preaching that. I appreciate my kids hearing this. But I want to tell you, it's really hard to find modest clothes. We just have the toughest time. What would you say to them? I have that happen all the time. Just come out. I really appreciate that. But I just tell you what, the reason we sometimes dress the way we do, it's just hard to find modest clothes. It's just really hard.
Maybe hard, but it's not impossible. If it's important to you enough, then we'll do it.
All right.
The woman in Las Vegas now has a hard time finding a job that's not being a prostitute.
Right.
Well, it's hard to find another type of job.
It's hard. our job is not gambling related. Yeah, hard is not impossible. If it couldn't be found, if we cannot find modest clothing, then we can't conform to God's will. What that's saying is, you know, God gave us a standard, but we just can't follow God's standard. You know, it's possible, I suppose, that something could happen to the grape crops to where it would be hard to put your hands on grape juice. It becomes scarce. So just forget the Lord's Supper then, right? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to find some grape juice. If I have to drive hundreds of miles to get it to observe the Lord's Supper, would you? I would. I'd grow my own grapes if I had to. I'd do something in order to conform to God's will. The way of the Lord is not always easy. Sometimes it's hard. Let me illustrate that. Let's just suppose, for illustration's sake, and we'll close with this. I know the Bible doesn't say this, but let's just suppose, to be identified with God's people, it was required that you wear orange coveralls. Can you imagine wearing such hideous outfits? They'd probably think you're associated with Tennessee and you wouldn't want to be. But let's just suppose that for a moment, okay? What would you do? Now get on some orange coveralls. But what if you had a hard time finding orange coveralls? I know you can find blue, you can find white, you can find all these colors, and you can't find orange coveralls here. What would you do?
Paint them orange.
Dime orange. Yeah. I'd figure out a way to get a pair of orange. What if you can't find them anywhere? Learn to sew. I'd find somebody to make orange coveralls. Let's find a lady that can make orange coveralls. And or we could get a pair and we could dime. Or would you rather look like the world? Would you say, you know what, I'm not wearing those things. I'd rather look like the rest of the world. I want to wear things like everybody else wears. Is that what we'd say? You think it'd be worth the sacrifice? People might think you're dorky. They think you look tacky. They would never compliment your outfit. But would it be worth it if we had to do that to conform? It would, wouldn't it? Would you make sure yours were orange? I can't sew, but I believe I'd learn to sew if that's the only way I could dress in orange coveralls. I'd just figure it out. I believe I can do it. May not look great, but I'd make me some orange coveralls. So the parallel to that would be when somebody says, it's hard to find modest clothing, what are we going to do? Find somebody to make you some. There are women who can sew. There are still women around that can do that. If they can't, you can find somebody, some seamstress somewhere that'll do that. Or there are alteration shops around. There have got to be some in Huntsville. There are in Nashville, where you take an immodest dress and let them add pieces to it or lengthen it or do something. Or find some way that you can get, there's a way you can get modest clothing just like you could get the orange coveralls. We'll close with this passage. 2 Corinthians 6 said, in verse 14, be not unequally yoked together with the unbelievers. Many think that refers to marriage. There is no reference to marriage there. The idea of unequally yoked. You might know what it's like to put a yoke. Have you ever seen a picture of two oxen and a yoke pulling a cart? And here's a load. The cart is to be pulled. And if you take oxen number one and you put oxen number two in the yoke with him, what's oxen number two doing with number one? He's pulling the same load, isn't he? And that's literally what verse 14 means. Don't pull the same. In fact, I think there's a translation that says don't pull together in the same load. Meaning don't pull the same load of sin that the world does. It's not talking about marriage. It's talking about don't pull in the same load of sin. Don't do what the world does. That's his point. Don't do what the rest of the world is doing. Don't pull in the same load. When the rest of the world dresses showing their thighs and their cleavage and their tight form-fitting outfits, don't pull in the same load of sin. Don't do what they do. So what does verse 17 say do? Come out from among them and be ye separate. Be different. That means we may look different from the rest of the world. But hopefully this is the material that Pat had heard online and asked me to come and present. I would have liked to have interacted a little more with you, but I knew I had a lot of material to cover, so that's why I kind of just kept pushing. But here are the principles for for our dress. It's possible our clothing could be sexually attractive, and we try to answer the objections that people have. Any questions I could answer? All I ask is you give it a fair hearing. Just give it a fair hearing and think about it.
Have you heard the comment that the church is about 10 years behind the current culture, like, you know, in mode of dress is one of the examples? Have you heard that?
Yeah, I have. And I've heard different numbers given to that, 10 years, 20 years, 15 years, something like that.
So unless you're, like you're saying, unless you're teaching against it, it's going to be there.
It's going to be worse. I have heard this analogy given, that generally conservative-minded brethren, which most of, I'm assuming, here are, conservative-minded brethren in non-institutional churches are about 20 years behind the more liberal, progressive churches of Christ. And often they're behind the world. And so it's just a matter of time till we catch up if we don't do our homework and do our teaching. And one of the deacons where I preached in Louisville years ago made this observation to me. There was kind of a movement of more liberal thinking among an element in the church. And when I left, I felt like I hadn't done any good. And this deacon said, "Yeah, you did. For 10 years, you kept the tide back. And if we keep the tide back for however long we keep preaching and teaching, we've done some good." So when we're all dead and gone, modesty may go the way of the world, but if we can keep the tide back while we're living, we're doing okay.
I'm just going to add one comment to something Don said when he's talking about the privilege. The young lady, or the lady wears a dress, doesn't show any cleavage, but is dropping down below the collarbone. Whether they intend it or not, it's a tease to men. It's like, I'm going to get right up next to it but not show you anything. Of course, showing any of it, cleavage would be nakedness, but this is like a tease, whether you intend it or not. You're trying to get right up the line so the man would think about it. I'm not saying you're necessarily doing it on purpose, but that's what the effect is.
Along that line, Pat, I've heard men who wait on the table comment that many women don't realize that there's going to be somebody standing above them. Or how many of us have been at a checkout line in Walmart or at Kroger or somewhere, and a girl has been over, seen to something, and you can see right down in her, it's so loose, you can see into her clothing. And many men have talked about, you know, when they're handing the elements to a woman, he's standing above her, obviously, and not intending to, but he sees more than he wants to see. And we need to think about keeping things where they can't be seen.
There's never a good time to see it. That's especially a bad time.
Yeah, when you're trying to focus on something higher and holier.
Anybody else got a question or comment?
I think it's just about accountability, like, as young people. You know, if we see one of our friends, like, I know, like, for women, you know, if you see one of your friends dressing inappropriately, you know, be a good friend to them and go tell them. They'll just kind of, you know, don't talk to someone else about it. Go talk to them about it. Because, I mean, you know, we're supposed to watch out for each other's souls. And so, you know, it's important. We want to keep the church strong. That's what we got to do.
And if somebody talks to me about it, I'm going to try not to get mad because they're trying to help me, not hurt me. Donnie, thank you for that good lesson. Appreciate you coming all the way down. All of you young people, appreciate y'all coming. These many 6 or 8 weeks that we're having tonight, appreciate you giving to Donnie a long way.